Thanks for joining the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform and encourage those who love kids and serve in kids and family ministry. Let's join in today's episode.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. My name's Tom Bump and I'm your host. I want to start off by thanking ServeHQ for their financial support of the KMC podcast as being our sponsor for this episode. So thanks. And you got to go check out ServeHQ. It's a great resource for you. Today on this episode, we're going to be talking about culture, volunteer culture, in fact, specifically why and how it's vital for us as leaders to create a thriving culture and really a community. And so I'm super excited to welcome back my good friend, Jason Tilley. Welcome back, Jason.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom. It's good to be here.
Hey, man. It's awesome. It's great to see you at CPC and to talk to you about this idea. Something that you got to present on while you were there. And so thanks for sharing that with us, because this is going to be something that the Kid Ministry Collective community on the Facebook group, we were just talking about, and some people were asking that, hey, this is starting a thriving volunteer culture was something they're struggling with. So I think this would be a good benefit for a lot of people listening today. And so, you know, to think about it, to minister, you talk about the idea of to minister through volunteers, you got to minister to volunteers.
Yeah.
And that volunteers need a thriving community where they experience purpose, connection, growth. And what we want to do is take some time today to chat about how and why this is so important. So one of the first things I want to ask you about is, you know, we have to get right this idea of cultivating a thriving culture. And it has to start with our thinking, I think. And even our use of terms. And so you suggest the idea of talking about the idea of building engagement and ownership and a community.
Yeah.
And so what did you mean by that?
Well, okay, so to talk about that in terms of community, you know, a thriving volunteer community is essential to any healthy and sustainable ministry program. All right, without it, you will not be able to meet your long-term spiritual needs of the people you serve. You only meet those short-term goals of things like safety, making sure that no, you know, every kid just kind of has a buddy. There's not a lot of, you know, discipleship happening there because you're just getting through week to week. And so one of the things we talked about in our seminar was the difference between like we wanted to use terms that difference between like help, which we often term come help me. A lot of times you'll hear appeals for come help me in my ministry.
Right.
And the thing about help is they're great, but that's exactly what they are. They're help. When I was in an interesting situation, God put me in a very large church when I first started ministry. So I had no experience in children's ministry whatsoever, wasn't pursuing it, was doing creative communications and drama and video and different types of communication that way. And God put me into a church where my first ministry was 1,200 kindergarten through fifth graders. And my first Christmas, I wasn't responsible for a lot of volunteers, a few media volunteers, a few stage volunteers. I was responsible for creating the worship experience for kids every week in my first role. And I remember being on the phone at Fuddruckers in between services, and we had probably six services that weekend. And I was on the phone just begging someone to come back, come have help. And I realized this is not some way I want to do ministry as far as that goes. And because help is really great in those times, Christmas and Easter, people who say, I want to come help you out. I'll be an extra body in the room, or I'll make sure kind of everybody stays, you know, where they're supposed to be. I'll do that. That's help.
Right.
And they're wonderful, but they're not going to go the extra mile. They're not going to own it. They're not going to see it as their ministry. No, instead of help, what we really want long-term is engaged ownership.
Okay, so what do you mean by engaged ownership?
Those are people who see this is my ministry.
Okay.
Not I'm serving in your ministry.
Yeah.
This is my ministry.
Right.
This group of kids, this stage leading, this media, whatever it is they're doing, this is your expression of ministry in their, this is what they do for their ministry in their life. This is how they serve their church community.
Okay.
And so that's the difference between like help and engaged ownership. And we'll get into that in a little bit, like really kind of what that looks like, what the two might look like. Because in some ways it's stuff you would expect, in some ways it's stuff you probably wouldn't expect.
Right.
Engaged ownership to look like.
So you also, you know, use the term community instead of teams. Why do you prefer community over team? Because a lot of us use the word teams, and that's not a bad term, I'm imagining, but community seems to be better. And so help us understand why is that?
Well, a team to me is just a small term. All right. It's what I call a smaller term. You're part of a team for a season. Think about football, soccer, softball, basketball, any sport, the team you're part of for that season. You all wear the same shirts. You show up and play the games. When the season's over, you may or may not hang out together. You may or may not see each other. When the season comes back around again, you may or may not come to play. So that's not really a long-term kind of feel to the word team. You may do it as a hobby. That's different from what you do. It's not really, it's a part of your life, but it's really more something you do for fun kind of thing. Community is a large term, right? We move to a community. We buy our houses in a community. We raise our kids in a community. We get pets in a community. When we go on vacation, we come home to our community. This is where we are. This is what we're a part of. This is where we watch our TV and mow our lawn. This is like where our day-to-day life is centered, in our community. And so I like that term, because when you feel like you're part of community, you want people to say, I'm home. This is my home.
Yeah, right.
I feel at home. That's what you're wanting.
There's definitely a deeper connection when you say that and how you said that. I mean, the picture that I had in my mind of, a team, you show up, you're there for a little while, and then you're gone. But a community, and you know, and for adults, we have community groups, life groups. So we have that image there. And so, yeah, I can see how if we were to build volunteer communities, how that's adding a deeper relational, even emotional tie to it, rather than just a team. Where you know there, you can have fair weather fans, fair weather teammates, right? That some are all in and some aren't. Some are content to sit the bench, others want to be a starter. Where in a community you're all together, you're all pulling and pushing together. Boy, that's a really good picture. So I can see why, you know, if we're going to start changing the culture of our volunteer systems and the way our setups are in our churches, that mindset shift could be really powerful. It could be a game changer for somebody listening that, wow, instead of just saying, hey, I'm trying to build a volunteer team, I'm trying to build a community of volunteers. Wow. I mean, that could be pretty powerful. I love that. I love that. So let me ask you then, what are some of those elements or ingredients that you see for a thriving community and building that?
Okay, so I see three. So the first one is called purpose, which I use the sub kind of clause. This is my cause. The second is called connection. These are my people. And the third is growth. These are my path. This is my path. So those three, if you have those, if people are find a purpose, a connection, and are growing while serving, you're well on your way to engaged ownership.
Gotcha. In the
community.
Well, let's unpack some of that, because I think those, all three of those things are worthy of taking a few moments and doing that. So how would you know you're building community when it comes to that idea of the cause and about purpose?
All right, so people often move to a community because they're looking for something, all right? They tend to be about what others in the community are about. So maybe, like, I live in the area of Austin, Texas, And I know that if I drive into downtown Austin, which is 15, 20 minutes from my house, I'm going to see a lot of young singles, a lot of people with dogs, a lot of people running in the park at 110 degrees, which I don't understand, but that's what they like. Yeah. There's a lot of active urban young life there.
Uh-huh.
All right. So I have a family, and I live in just outside of that in a town called Dripping Springs. We're out in the hill country. It's a little bit slower pace of life. You're going to see more of families doing things together. We're a very big growing family community. If you live in Dripping Springs, we're an anomaly because we just have one child, so there's three of us. Most families here are averaging four or five. They have a different four or five kids. They have
wow.
We have a different kind of vibe out here. So, you know, people move out here because this is known as a community for families.
Gotcha.
You know, there's lots of things for the family. There's lots of things to support the family. So people move to community because they want something.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be clear about what you're about and what God wants to do through your ministry. That's kind of my translation. Because this is the thing you need to know about it. You will not attract everyone to your community. I don't want to move my family to downtown Austin. It's not a good vibe for our family. Dripping Springs is a great vibe for our family. All right. People who live in downtown Austin don't want to live out here. It's not for everybody. So you won't attract everyone with your purpose, but you will attract the right people, the people who resonate with what you're trying to accomplish. And so the question you want to ask yourself is, if I ask my team, the people in my community, the people who I serve with, if I ask them, what are we trying to do? What would they say?
Mm.
And the answer should be what we call your just cause. Now, I took that phrase from Simon Sinek, who wrote the book, The Infinite Game, Leaders Eat Last, Start With Why. He's a great way of articulating some of these things. And, you know, a just cause has certain elements. You're for something,
mm-hmm.
all right? You're affirmative, you're optimistic, you're inclusive, you're open to all who might contribute, right? You're service oriented, you're for the primary benefit of others. You're resilient, you're able to endure change, and you're idealistic. You're big, bold, and it's unattainable alone. So think about that for a second. I mean, let's talk about the for something, all right? You want something for a group of people. So in children's ministry, your just cause, there's something you want for the children and their parents and the families of your ministry. You want them to come to Christ. You want them to be disciples. You want them to experience what it means to live life the way God intended. There's something there that you want for your family. You're open to anyone who wants to help you do that. You're inclusive. There's nothing about my ministry that would keep you out. All right. So, you know, if you're just, you know, so that way it doesn't matter what gender, what race, what walk of life you come from, you're going to make an opportunity for people to be a part of this community. Mm-hmm. You're open. All right. You're service oriented. So the people who benefit is not you. The people who benefit are the people you're serving. So the kids and their families are going to be the primary beneficiaries of the work that you're doing.
Right.
The thing you're for. And you're resilient. You're able to endure change. He talked about it in terms of political or like a different president or different Congress. I like to say a different pastor. Your ministry is not set up to where if you have a change in your leadership, there's a consistency within the church. And that's actually very important for your community. It's very important for the members. If they're a part of a ministry that can stay hot on a vision through a leadership change, you won't have as much of that leadership fallout that a lot of churches suffer through when a pastor moves on, another pastor moves in, they decide, well, because they're not tied to a person. You know, they're tied to their ministry. It's resilient. And finally, it's idealistic. This is something when you cast it, there's no way you could do it. You want the people you're casting this to look at you and say, I have to help that poor person because they're never going to get that there by themselves. All right. You're this one little guy pushing this really big truck. And they're like, well, let's go help him push that truck because he's not going to get there
yes.
on his own.
Right.
So that is that's kind of what you just caused. And so that's really where your purpose is, because people won't necessarily serve just because, but they do like to serve a just cause.
Mm. Oh, that's good. Say that again. Right. Say that again. That's really
people
good.
Won't necessarily serve just because, but they like to serve a just cause.
Yes.
All right. And so I just want to real quick, I can share like how you can share that cause.
Yes, please.
All right. So I got this from Nancy Duarte. Nancy Duarte is a communications expert. She runs a firm out of San Francisco, New York, called Duarte Inc. They're awesome. And they wrote a book called Illuminate. I recommend any pastor read that book, because it is all about how you communicate vision to a large group of people. And it's a great one. And here's the four ways that she talks about you share your purpose through. First was speeches. So some corporate setting, like, you know, maybe it's a volunteer rally you do in the fall, or maybe it's something you do at the beginning of summer where you're sharing the vision. And this is a big, you know, everybody's sitting there listening. Do you share this vision? That's the first thing. But then you got the flip side of that, which is called stories. And those are personal. And I say stories, use those in a personal, intimate setting. This is you and three or four people where you're sharing the same vision in a different format, in a way that's personal and intimate and close. Symbols, which is you can put them on logos, you can put them on t-shirts. They don't have to be screen print. It could just be a drawing you do. But there's a symbol that when someone sees that symbol, they recognize that. It's something that represents something that happened in the ministry. All right. It could be patches, it could be buttons, it could be anything, but just some sort of symbol, some sort of visual representation of this is who we are. FC Kids, the church I was at, we had four colors for three colors for our elementary. We had blue, red, and yellow. Those were our three colors. They were in the blue was kindergarten, first grade, the yellow was second, third grade, and the red was fourth and fifth grade. So blue, yellow, red. So we had like this square that had blue, yellow, red, and then FC Kids. And that was our symbol. Yeah. If you saw that, you knew what we were about. Finally, ceremonies. We kind of mentioned them earlier, fall kicks off, end of the year dinner. The church I'm a part of, we have a end of the year dinner for our move-in and move-out team because we're in a school. And so it's a fun time. We just get together, eat some food, and someone gives away the dumbest award you've ever heard of for the silliest things you would see. But it's a great part of the community. They're excited about these ceremonies. Yeah. So speeches, stories, symbols, and ceremonies. That's how you share your purpose with your people.
That is so good. So purpose is huge. And we're going to dig into the other three here in just a moment. But I want to stop for a minute and just do a couple of things. First of all, you know, hey, maybe you're out there and you're listening and you're wondering, hey, how do I build that community? And is there a way to really learn this and implement it myself? Well, I want to share something real quick about something that the Kid Ministry Collective is working on, KMC Coaching is working on. And it's something that I know you're going to love. There's a fun and very interactive series, 6 online group lessons called KMC Hero Bootcamp. And in this bootcamp, we're focusing on how you can learn to overcome the villains that hold you back from building a healthy volunteer community. Not only healthy, but sustainable. And so if you'd like to jump into one of the beta groups where you can learn these things, there's a few spaces that are still open, and for $249, you can jump in right now. So head over to kmccoach.net, and you can get more information. There's also a link there where you can join a group that's going to be starting on March 3rd. So don't wait. March 3rd, 2020, these groups start up. There's still room for you to help you learn how to build a healthy community and culture in your volunteer ministry. This episode is sponsored by SurveyHQ. Stop using clunky and unsafe communication tools in your ministries. With a new tool from SurveyHQ, your email and text announcements can be live alongside your team chats in one unified platform that's built just for churches. This has total ease and accountability at the forefront in mind. So go to servehq.church and find out more about Huddled Up. Thank you to ServeHQ for sponsoring this edition of the KMC. Hey, welcome back. Jason and I, before the break, we were talking about the ingredients of a thriving community. And so let's dive into this next one, and it's connection. Why is it so important to make connection a high priority in a volunteer community? If you want to change the culture of your volunteer ministry, outreach, recruiting, retention, why is connection so important to that culture?
Well, Tom, without connection, volunteers in your ministry become like cars at rush hour.
Mm.
I used to drive the same route every day from my house to the church I was serving in. And I got to the point where, and this is in the large metroplex of a big city, I'd recognize certain cars. And I've seen that car before. I'd say, whether it was a bumper sticker, or, you know, some interesting shade of a car, different shape. There's, you know, something about a car that would stick with me that if I saw it again, right, amongst thousands of other cars, I'm like, oh, yeah, and it made sense. Never knew who the driver was.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything about them. Just saw them in passing, and that's what would happen to your ministry. They become just cars passing at rush hour. They don't know each other. There's no connection. You'd be alone in a sea of people with the same shirt.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it boils down to. So you really have to have connection. You want your people who serve to say, these are my people. This is my tribe.
Mm-hmm.
This is who I serve with. And so to create a thriving volunteer community, you have to have points of connection, points where they can get together. You can't just trust, okay, well, they'll get to know each other while they're serving. You don't really have a lot of time. Yeah, most children's ministries, they don't have a lot of free time for the volunteers to chat.
And they're probably only going to know the other leader that they're serving with.
Right, but most of the time they have a responsibility. They have a job they're trying to do.
Right.
And so they're going to focus on their job, not necessarily connecting with people. So you want to have points of connections. And you think about, where people connect in a community, right? They typically connect in passing, but they connect in interesting places like grocery stores, coffee shops, schools, you know, shopping for clothes, maybe at the gym, maybe sports clubs or, you know, after school activities, the library, PTA meetings,
mm-hmm.
you know, entertainment, restaurants. There's different places. They'll bump into somebody. Oh, hey, how you doing? Let's talk. What's going on? So the thing you want to ask yourself, what are some common places of connection that you could have in your ministry? And if you don't, what might you create? And so I got three that I want to share really, you know, with you. Okay. That I think are crucial. Because, I mean, you don't have a lot of time on Sunday mornings, okay?
Yep, so, agreed.
If you're going to do it at your church, there's really three connection points. There's what I call group huddles. And we just call it the power of the circle. Now, I want to tell you, this is very interesting. We were talking about this earlier. I shared this talk at the Children's Pastors Conference
mm-hmm.
in Orlando. Which if you go to one conference,
yes,
go to CPC.
I agree with you.
I don't think you can get a better overall experience
yeah.
than CPC.
Yep. Amen.
But at this, I was presenting on this particular topic, and they, per my request, set tables up in the room. So I had several round tables that sat 8 to 10 people, and you could come in and sit down. Now, I've been teaching at CPC for several years at this point. And most every other time they set it up in what they call theater style, where chairs are in rows and they're facing the front. And I remember every time before every seminar I ever taught, someone would come into that, they would come in, sit down in that theater seating, and they would sit very quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And someone would sit next to them, and they would almost whisper if they talked at all.
Yeah.
And if I talked to them, they would engage, and they would see how my voice is just getting softer. That's just what they would do. They would get yep. so soft.
I've seen
that. Noise in that room before that breakout was unbelievable. It was amazing. And the only difference, and I told them this in the seminar, you're sitting at tables looking at each other.
Yeah.
You're not looking up here at me. You're looking at each other. Circles are powerful community builders.
Yes.
You don't have to know the person in the circle, but when you're in a circle, you automatically feel a part of something. So if you have meetings before your volunteers, if you have touch bases, I would recommend if you don't stand in front of a group, stand in a circle. Because you're building, you're communicating community without saying a word. You're saying, these are the people I stand beside, these are the people I look across at. We're together. There's a sense of togetherness in that. That's the first point. So, you know, the power of a circle, group circle. The other way is food. Now, people go, oh, well, food's expensive. Yes, food is a cost. It does. Bagels and donuts aren't free.
Right.
Somebody wants to pay, somebody needs to pay for them. Yes, you waste food. I'll go ahead and tell you right now, all of your food's not going to get eaten. And I know that churches get very angsty about that, and they're afraid of wasting food. I've seen some of the largest churches in the country that say, you know what? Food is amazingly important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because of the food. It doesn't matter what it is, a bagel, donut. No one cares about that. But when people come in, and they're coming in to get their food, and they grab that bagel, and they get that coffee, and they stand in the corner with another volunteer and talk about something. Or they sit at a table with two or three volunteers and they prepare for the lesson they're going to talk. And there is instant community happening right there.
Yes.
Just because you provided them with an opportunity. And what we see a lot of times, our church right now is in the process of figuring out how to do food at our campus. We haven't done it yet. People leave in between services to get breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gone.
Right.
There's no community happening because they're gone. They have to come back. They try to get back in time for the circle. Sometimes they make it, sometimes they don't. And I share that only to say that we're there and that we're in the process of figuring out because we didn't have the space to do a place to have food until recently. And so now we figured it out and they're working toward that. But
that's awesome.
Food is much more than food. Food is community. Food is gathering. Food is getting people around. And finally, I want to talk about like shared experiences, things you do together. What we did, one of our biggest when I was in the church was we did a VBS, and our VBS, we called it Adventure Week. It was big, and we got crazy and remodeled our entire building every year to fit the theme of the VBS. And we wanted the kids to have an amazing immersive experience and really, you know, buy into it and have a great time. And then in the process that sets them up well to communicate the gospel. That's a whole nother topic. I can get into that. Creativity does not equal gimmickry. It equals it's about communicating the gospel well. But one of the side benefits of that was we had volunteers who bought in and would stay all night sometimes during the week working on that building together. And the relationships that were born out of that saw fruit in so many other areas of the church because they built community. Now, I'm not saying you have to go remodel your building every week, every summer to build your community, but you should create opportunities to have shared experiences with your volunteers. You can do some stuff going back to circles. In a couple ways you can create the circle. There's creating the circle on site, which we talked about with food and gathering. Tom, you actually used this example in the talk. Tom, you have one that I loved that I would love for you to share about something you did once to build community with your volunteers.
I was going to say one of the whole idea of circle, it is powerful. And I always say life's better done in circles than rows all the time. And one of the things that I found worked for my teams, especially when I was brand new coming into a new church, one of the first things I would do is make sure that my home, I had a place that we could congregate, a back porch. But what I often did is made sure I had a fire pit. And one of the first things I would do is open up my home a couple nights. We would do it a couple different times during the month. And I would say, hey, that's an open house. Come on over. We're going to have food to cook over the fire. Bring a chair if you want. We'll have plenty of chairs. I always have plenty of camping chairs around. They're cheap. They're inexpensive. You can buy a few, have them ready to go. Get a little portable fire pit if you don't have a stone one. I built one. And I'll tell you, no agenda, not even really any ministry talk. It was all about just connecting with each other, getting to know about the different families, about what they did outside of church, what they enjoyed doing. It was a way for me to learn about the community and the culture that I was living in as a new pastor. But then even as I continued on, those were some of the best times that I got deeper into relationship, learned things about some of my volunteers, that really we became more of a community after that, because that was a reference point. They would refer to it, about those conversations. They looked back on those times, with such affection, and it really made it special. It brought the community, the team, to a community, because, instead of just seeing each other on just one day a week, we saw each other outside of the church, and there was something transformational about that. It really was, of just sitting around roasting a marshmallow over the fire, laughing and joking, you know, telling campfire stories. And I tell you, you learn a lot about people. And it was so much fun. And so I have never regretted the investment of building a fire pit. I mean, I literally built the last one in the rain on Memorial weekend, because I wanted to have it ready, to kick off in June so that I could start these Thursday night fire pits. And we just opened up our home on Thursday nights and said, come on over. You don't have to sign up, just show up. And a lot of people would even text me, hey, I'm coming, you know, and I'd be like, fire's on, let's go. And it was just a great time of just hanging out with my team, and getting to know those people, and for them to get to know me too. I had a lot of people go, wow, you know, I didn't know you did this or that, or, you know, just, they saw a different side of me than being in the church. And that was huge. It's just huge.
Well, then now it's less formal and it's not elaborate. It's not a big production. Okay. You just did something that you guys could share together that wasn't doing the work of the ministry.
Yeah.
And it was just getting to know each other, and that builds community. And then you can do this in person. Those are great. Yep. Yep. Those are the best. You could also do it. You could build your own Facebook groups.
Yep.
You could use text chains. I have a volunteer that serves in my wife's ministry who texts me every week because we're both large group teachers, and she wants to, you know, encourage me, and I encourage her. Mm-hmm. You can use short encouragements during the week, you know, with that, to, you know, with groups and things. So there's lots of opportunities there to create your circle, virtual, physical, offsite, onsite. Let me go back for a minute though to the circle in church.
Mm-hmm.
I want to share some kind of a blueprint for that, because I want people to have a handle on what that really looks like. Cause I feel like in some ways this time it's not long, 2 to 5 minutes,
right?
But it's precious.
Yes.
And you can accomplish a lot, or you can really lose it. So here's what I would say. The first thing I would say is vision. You're repeating your just cause. Why? Because people forget.
Yes.
All right. You know, it's like people vision leaks. Zig Ziglar says, you know what? Bathing doesn't stick every either. That's why we do it every day. So you continually come back and you want to repeat the vision. So take a minute and give us a vision for what today's about. The second thing is gratitude. Thank somebody. Doesn't have to, you can thank everybody. That's fine. But it's really good when you pick one person and thank them specifically. Even, and they're standing there amongst the entire group and you say, hey, thank you for what you do. Celebrate something, celebrate what's going on. We'll talk about this a little bit later. It's called burn the free fuel. You can do appreciation, recognition, and encouragement, things that you can celebrate there. The third, now you hear now, that's the fourth step. That's vision, gratitude, celebration. The fourth one is information. And the reason I want to highlight that that's fourth, and it better stay fourth, is because this is what we tend to do. Hey, Glad y'all here. So excited about today. Now, let me go over these 15 things you need to know.
Yeah.
And I know why we do it. I do. Because by that point, you've emailed it, you've texted it, you've Facebooked it, you've called them, you've showed up at their house with a pizza, you wrote them a personal letter, you've sent them a candygram, you've had a dancing monkey jump around and hand them an envelope, and they still look at you like this is the first time you've ever said it.
Right, right.
I get it. I totally get it. But you know what? This is not the time for that. You want to share 1 to 2 of the most important pieces of information, max. Because let me tell you, after the second one, they're not listening anyway.
Right.
Just share 1 or 2, hit them hard, maybe have them repeat them back to you if you want. And then you want to lastly go into prayer and pray together before you step out. That's a good circle. Where it's heavy on the vision, heavy on the gratitude, heavy on the celebration, a little bit of information, and then prayer.
Yes.
And prayer could actually even move first to be the most important thing, because prayer is going to be, I like it either first or last, because it's the most important thing you're going to do in that whole circle.
Right. That's right.
But prayer definitely. And if you had to, if you had to cut one thing for time, information.
Right.
Cut the information. It's the least community building tool you're going to have there.
Yes.
So that's kind of a bit on the connection, getting people connected and helping them stay connected.
Right. And that is going to be a powerful part of this changing the culture. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're aiming for in this episode. And we're wanting to encourage more kid ministry leaders period, to start changing that culture in your church, because it's obvious that's why so many are struggling to get volunteers to start, is because of the culture. And so if you start changing that, and where your community is talking outside of the community into the rest of the body, I tell you, it's a powerful thing. And when you start emphasizing those things, it's so powerful. And so we also say, you know, if something's not growing, it's getting stagnant. And so how do your volunteers see both the growth in those serving as well as the growth in their connection to God and to each other? So mm-hmm. How would you answer that?
Well, so we talked about growth being, this is my path, and it came from, and this is not a knock from any pastor. I've sat under many a great pastor's teaching, but I've heard it time and again over 20 years. I learn more from serving with the kids than I do from the worship service.
Mm.
Now, there's a whole lot more that goes into that if you put your time in to prepare. There's more Bible study. There's more explanation. And I also worked with a lot of people who never grew up in church. They didn't have the foundational teaching, so they didn't know a lot of the things they didn't know. And so when they learn it, they're like, I grew so much from that. But in community, we grow. We grow up if we're young. We grow old if we're not young. You know, sometimes serving in a thriving volunteer community will grow in their faith. But that growth has to be cultivated. It's not something that just, it'll happen, but it's better if you cultivate it. Mm-hmm. And so what you really want to do is set some simple ways to do this. You know, again, you can't do this for everyone all the time. You got to pick one at a time, go to people individually. Communities are built over the long haul.
Right.
Long haul. Please don't try to build your community in a sprint. You won't make it.
No.
You won't make it.
No.
So communities are built one person at a time over the long haul.
Yes.
So here's what you do. You want to create meaningful and memorable moments for your community. And that could be as simple as going up to someone who's been serving your ministry a while and saying to them, hey, I've been watching what you're doing. I've been watching your growth. I'm where you're growing and how you're doing, and I'm watching what's going on. I'm seeing what God's doing in your life, what he's doing in life and how you're reaching those kids, what he's doing in the life of you and how you're not the same person you used to be. When you do that, that sticks. That sticks.
Right.
And people see that. And people see that. The other way, so that's a personal growth. I mean, again, you're really, it's just an encouragement of you going to someone and saying, hey, you know what? When you first got here, you were so scared of teaching. you were so like wanting to make sure you got it just right. And I remember how those conversations that we had where you were just like, but I missed this point right here. And I was trying to tell you that it's okay. Well, now I watch you with those kids and you're so natural and you engage them so well and the kids respond to you so well. It's truly amazing to see how you've grown in that area. That's what pointing out growth looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's in a personal level. The other thing is structural growth. You want to promote them into leadership. If you have a leadership opportunity and they're a good fit. Now, just because someone's been doing something a long time doesn't mean they're a good leader.
Oh, that's for sure.
But if they are, yeah, because sometimes people are hesitant to move into leadership because they're like, well, no, I'm not equipped for that. Well, that's typically the right person for the job if they feel too humble to lead. So moving them into there, opening up new opportunities, not setting and forgetting these volunteers and saying, well, you know what? They love the nursery. They've been in the nursery forever. Instead saying, hey, you know what? You might be a better fit here for one circumstance or another. Starting new initiatives to reach new people. You want to put some of these volunteers in a new spots. So if someone is the same person who served in your ministry in the last year, last 3 years, should they be the person that started? And I guess I kind of want to say it in different ways. Is someone who served in your ministry the same person they were last year?
Mm-hmm.
Are they the same person they were the last 3 years? So you want to have your finger on the pulse of your community as a leader, right? I like to say you want to be someone in the know about community growth, not someone who looks up and says, wow, we've really changed. There's people who don't pay attention to anything happening in their community and say, like, when did we get so big? When did the traffic get so bad?
Yeah.
As opposed to you're the person who's like, oh, you know what's going into that store? Or you know where the bank's going to put their next building? You want to be that. You want to be that person. And so those are the three like key elements, purpose, connection, growth. That's kind of a breakdown of how that works.
Yeah.
And if you want to know how it's working, that's where you're going to see engaged ownership. You're going to see people saying, this is my ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And engagement is what I say looks like this. It's this action first, then discussion. We had a volunteer who was over a room. I had a pastor who was on a stage. He was teaching. They had a crisis. Something happened. Nobody was in danger, but something happened. And that volunteer who was in charge of the room took ownership, made the adjustments necessary, fixed things, changed things. And when the pastor came off stage, this volunteer explained to him how it was going to run for the rest of the hour. That's engaged ownership. All right. That's called, I didn't wait for you to come off to tell us what to do. I took care of it. That's engaged ownership. Don't wait for me. You want people who don't want to wait for you to make the call.
Right.
You trust them. They trust you. And you trust that they're going to make the right decision in the circumstance. That's engaged ownership. Another loan is what I call community organizers, people who build community around you and therefore you're not having to do it all yourself. So I was part of a volunteer team and this was happening. They said, hey, you know what? In 2 weeks, we're going to go down to the river. We're going to have a camp out. Cookout. We're going to eat hot dogs. We're going to float. And they just did that themselves. There's only about 10 or 12 of them and their families. Because the church was really, really big, and you wouldn't be able to get everybody out there. You wouldn't be able to organize something that big. But she, being the leader of that volunteer team, organized it. She was her own community organizer. That's engaged ownership.
Yes.
They facilitate what you're doing without your prompting. All right? So those are typical. You see that, you get really excited. I mean, I know I would. When I saw it, I got really excited when I would see people doing that. Here's the one that's not as exciting, but it's another sign. They start pushing you. They push back.
Right.
Maybe they don't like something. Maybe they don't like the direction you're going. Maybe they feel like that this isn't necessary. Maybe they feel like that, you know what, things the way they are. And I know we've had stories about how do you deal with those people. But let me give you a flip of that. That can be frustrating, but they own it.
Right, because they're taking it personal. You're right.
Yes, they take it personal because they care. If they didn't care, they wouldn't do anything. They would either go with the flow or quit.
Right.
They wouldn't be giving you grief about it if they didn't care. Yeah. It didn't matter. They didn't own it and see that as their ministry. So I know it's annoying. I know it can drive you nuts. You may think, why are they obsessed over this? But keep in mind, take a breath and say, you know what? That's engaged ownership. And I need to honor that. I'm not saying you change your vision. I'm not saying you don't do what you think God tells you you should do. But honor that person. And treat them as someone who really cares as much about the ministry as you do.
Right. Yeah.
They wouldn't be putting this effort in otherwise.
Right. You can listen to them and maybe even help redirect them or help them see even your perspective too. And then obviously out of that can come some great things. So,
and more than likely, unless they just don't have a role, they'll stay with you through the change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They'll stay with you because they care.
Right.
They care. Right. So that's what engagement looks like. Let me give you a little bit about what disengagement might look like. All right. Now, this is not absolute, but this is what it might look like. It's something I would call inconsistent service, hit and miss. They kind of serve when they feel like it. I'm not talking about your people who come like once a month or every other week because they don't serve every week. That's not really what I'm talking about. You can be disconnected and serve every week, and you can be totally bought in and serve once a month. It just depends on where you are in life at that moment. But if you're serving haphazardly and like, I'll be a sub, maybe call me, that's disengaged. That's not really, they're not owning much of anything there. If they lack relationship, like if you're the only one they connect with ever, you're the only contact being the children's ministry leader, that's a problem. That's not, they haven't built relationships with anyone else. They give you no feedback ever. No complaints, no comments, no compliments, no suggestion, nothing. If you ask them, they give you nothing. It's just like, it's good. It's good. No, that's not. No outside communication. Never want to meet, never want to have coffee. If you try to text them or email them or anything, they never want to get back to you. Every conversation is fine. It's fine. That's a sign of disengagement. Never frustrated with anything. No frustration means they can't think of something better. Nothing bothers them. So they probably don't care. Any one of those could be signs of engagement. I don't want to say they are because that's not, I don't want to, it's not a label we're trying to put on this thing here. I just want to give you some hints to say, okay, this isn't happening the way I hoped it would. So that's what disengagement looks like.
Good. So, all right, we're going to have to wrap this episode up. So I want to bring it to a high practical point. And so what are a couple of steps that you would say, hey, here's some first steps. If you're a leader, that is desiring to say, hey, I want to change my volunteer culture. What are some first steps that they could take?
All right. Move towards. Good. Yeah. Being a community, you're the primary community builder. If you're a children's ministry leader, it is on you to start it. It's not on you to complete it, but it is on you to start it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two qualities that a community builder has. They follow Jesus' example. And what I say, they think like a designer. And Jesus fulfilled purpose, connection, and growth within his disciples. He gave his followers purpose when he said things like, come follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. These are some big, bold visions that invited them to come along. He connected with them. He says, I've called you my friends. Love one another as I've loved you. And the kingdom of God is a place where we love one another and a place where we serve one another. He kind of gave them a picture of what connection looked like. And then growth. Peter and John wrote gospels. They did some of the same miracles that Jesus did. And the disciples started the church. So when you look at what Jesus did with the disciples, you get a really clear example of how he built a community. But Jesus did two things with them. He was patient and he was prayerful.
Mm-hmm.
Patient and prayerful with his disciples, because believe me, they frustrated him. They had lack of faith. They had a desire for importance. They were short-sighted. They thought he was going to be a king. All right. Now, keep in mind, these aren't people that just happen to show up. Jesus chose these guys. He handpicked them. And so he's picking the guys that are giving him all this grief. But he handled it with patience and prayer. So with patience, I like to say first time, every time. And that goes back to what I talked about of all the different ways you try to communicate to that volunteer and they're looking at you like they've never heard it before. Doesn't matter. Say in your head, first time, every time. Mm-hmm. If you treat them like this is the first they've heard of it, then you will have a great attitude when you, when you engage with them. That frustration will not build up and show. First time, every time. It's a mantra I have to say to myself a lot. First time, every time. And there's going to be a lot of first times.
Yes.
Remember, community is a marathon, not a sprint.
Right.
And so, you know, you got to have patience with their weakness and their errors and their failures. You just do. Prayer. Jesus prayed rhythmically for the people who serve you. My wife uses the Prayer Echo app. She's got the names of all the volunteers in her Prayer Echo, and it cycles through, and she prays for them every week, and she lets them know that she's praying for them. She lets them know what she prayed for them. All right, you want to pray for those who have not yet joined your community, because you probably, if I don't know if you're that rare church that doesn't need more volunteers and more people to serve, but I've always believed as long as you have people in the church, they need a place to serve.
That's right.
So pray for those who haven't joined your community yet, and then again, let them know. And then be an example of how we should treat each other. Going back to burn the free fuel, I think ARE, appreciation, recognition, and encouragement. I got that from Lee Cockrell. He was vice president of operations for Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
And he used those three. He said, that goes a whole much further than volunteer gifts or big expensive things. Just basically be a person who encourages, appreciates, and recognizes. And appreciating and recognition, I always have to say, that's public. That's really a public thing. So you want to say it in front of a group of people because people feel real good when you honor them in front of others. And then encouragement, I say, is private only because it doesn't have to be, but it tends to be you're encouraging them through a tough time. So I had a volunteer for one of my VBSs who really was carrying the load for everybody else. He was obviously frustrated, and it was unfortunate. It wasn't his fault. The other people were not doing their part. And the next day I called him. And just, I didn't get him. I got a voicemail and said, hey, I just want you to know, I appreciate you. I know what you're going through. I'm sorry nobody else prepared. This stinks, but man, thank you for carrying the load last night.
Yeah.
And he came in that night and told me it meant a lot to him. He was really struggling that day, but that encouragement meant a lot. These things, it doesn't take a lot of money. It just takes intentionality and something you really want to do. All right. Finally, you want to think like a designer. And that, when I say think like a designer, we talk about a thing in design a lot called empathy maps, where we look at how people feel, how people see, how people hear, how people say, how people think. Basically, you want to put yourself in the position of your volunteers on a regular basis. See it through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Try to see it through their eyes and not yours.
Right.
And look for ways you can make their life better. Look for ways you can make their ministry more effective. Look for ways you can resource them with things they may need that they don't even know they need in order to better serve the people they serve. But when you put yourself in their shoes regularly and you look at your ministry through their eyes, and you can do that by literally doing that. You can also do that with surveys and talking to your volunteers and saying, you know, what frustrates you, what makes you happy, what really does that. When you do those things and you start putting intentionality behind their experience and trying to say, the volunteer's experience is important to me as the experience of the kids and their parents. And I talk about this a lot when I say children's ministry is a three-legged stool. It's volunteers, it's parents, it's kids. Any one of those legs is missing and the thing's wobbly.
Right.
So you have to put equal emphasis on each. And this is one of those areas where you say, is their experience the best it could be? Because their experience makes the kids' experience better. Their experience makes the parents' experience better. So that, my friend, is building a thriving volunteer community.
There we go. There we have it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the goal is now, hopefully, as you've been listening to this episode, that you've come away with some things to challenge your thinking, and we want to encourage you to consider the idea of changing your culture. And remember, this is a process, guys. This is something that is like he said it, and I'll say it again too. It is a marathon. You can't go running out. I mean, I remember in high school, I was a shot putter. I was one of the wide bodies who we were shot putters because we didn't want to run. And we only had to do short little runs when we did. But I remember our coach always loving to subject us to public humiliation on occasion, where there were a certain couple of track meets during the season that he would have what he called the shot putters 220. It was quite the sight. Thank God there were no in social media back then. And there would have been a lot of insanely funny videos of a bunch of us guys running this supposed race. Because it was always funny how we would start off with this burst of energy tearing around, and we would get to the first corner and a couple of the guys were already out of gas because they'd already expended all their energy in the first 50 yards. And then they would get around to the first 100 and some of us would still be chugging along, you know, at a decent pace. And then we'd get around and we'd hit that straightaway. And I'll never forget this one time where we were all trying to put probably about 85% effort into it. And even at 85, by the time we hit the straightaway, most of us were gassed because we were used to going across an 8-foot circle, not running 220. I will never forget. For us, that was a marathon.
Yeah.
For some people, those were sprints. For us, that was a marathon. And I will tell you, I will never forget the last 10 yards of some of those races where half of us are gasping and trying to stay on our feet. I remember several races where some of us literally rolled across the line because we fell on our faces because our arms were flailing. it was bad. So listen, you're not going to change your volunteer culture overnight. It's going to be a marathon, not a sprint. And yes, sometimes it's going to be comical. Sometimes it's going to be painful. All of the things that I learned in running that 220-yard dash. That's what changing a volunteer culture can be like at times. But on the other side of that, when you look back and you see where you've come, it's going to be worth it. To change it. So don't keep going the same direction. Do your best to make a change because the community will thank you on the flip side. So that's good. So Jason, thanks so much, man, for sharing your heart. Hey, I know other people may want to get in touch with you or follow some things that you do. You have a great ministry called Ministry Accelerator. Tell us a little bit about that and how people can connect up with you. And then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, Ministry Accelerator is our website. It's ministryaccelerator.org. It's where we talk about using creativity and innovation, design. We also have a section called Kidmin Accelerator, where we talk about specifically children's ministry things. And I just recently wrote a blog post about how your check-in is more than just a check-in. And it's another day for another conversation, yeah. But you can check out the post on there now.
That's going to be a good episode. Yes, we will have to do that one. That's a good one. All right, guys. Well, thanks again for listening. Again, thanks to SurveyHQ for your sponsorship of this episode. And again, if you're looking to change your volunteer culture and you're looking to develop a community, check out the KMC Bootcamp. We would love to have a few more people join us starting on March 3rd. So head over to kmccoach.net. Check it out. So again, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Hey, if you get an opportunity to leave a review, that just helps more people find us on your favorite podcasting app. We would certainly appreciate that support and encouragement. And as always, if you're not part of the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, we would invite you to come join that community over there where you can get connected and continue to iron sharpen iron. We're just thrilled about how God's growing that group and growing this podcast. So thanks again for listening and join us again for another edition of the KMC real soon.
You've been listening to the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. If you'd like to connect with us, we encourage you to join the Kids Ministry Collective Facebook group or contact me on Twitter at PTBump. We'd also love for you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review for us so that we can help others learn about this podcast. Our goal of the KMC comes from Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. We hope you'll join us again real soon for another KMC podcast.